If psychology and pop culture had a baby, they'd call it the Shrink Tank Podcast. Our illustrious panel of shrinks analyze and psychoanalyze what's happening in entertainment and pop culture. I'm Dave Verhagen. I'm a psychologist, author, and, of course, bad magician. And here's our regular panel. Rachel Kitson is a psychologist and a media darling. We like that term. She's written the most popular articles ever on ShrinkTank.com. In fact, more than a couple. You're the queen of Shrink Tank. And so, Rachel, are you into anything lately that you're working on?
Well, I have an ongoing sort of analysis of the Kardashian clan, and I've done Kim so far, and then just kind of an overall synopsis of the family. And I think next I'm going to be taking on Kris Kardashian, the momager.
There you go.
Yep.
Frank the Psych Weasel is a psychologist. He's also the author of Max Gamer, and he's our resident insane person. And Frank, what are you either thrilled or upset about this week?
I'm usually never thrilled, but I'll tell you what I'm upset about. So I take my kids to school every morning, and there's this thing called the ferry boat where you drop the kids off, and it's real simple. You pull in, you go around, you drop off, you can't stop before you get to a certain point, and it's real straightforward. And then every year, there are these new parents or narcissistic parents who are like, hey, I'm going to do it different. And they plot the whole line, and they pull in, and they don't know what they're doing. And it drives me insane because it makes me late for work, and it makes me say some not pleasant things in front of my kids. And it's those people's fault. And I'm like, it is so simple to pull up, stop, and let your kid out. But no, hey, I'm going to pull up, and there's like 100 cars behind me, but I've got to, you know, open the back gate, and I've got to get out all the little stuff, and like 100 cars have gone ahead. There's all this room, and the police are like, come on, let's go, and they don't. That drives me insane.
I don't know how you deal with that, man. I'm sure you just shout out, go back to public school. You know?
Hilarious.
What's the name of that zone?
The ferry boat.
The 1%
zone. See, I think
zone.
It's misnamed.
No, what did you... I don't want to know what you said.
The 1%
It's shaped like
zone.
A boat. It looks like a boat, and it's like a drop-off.
It's called the yacht zone.
Oh, man. And Hederly, I hate you to death.
Speaking of Hederly, Jonathan Hederly is a counselor. He's a critic and a sarcasm all-star. Jonathan, you've got some psychology and pop culture stories that you've been looking at this week. What do you got for us?
All right. So first one comes from businessinsider.com. The title is Science Vindicates Middle School Nerds, says cool kids don't turn out that well. Now, those who are considered the cool kids at school actually turn out to have more difficulties later in life, according to this study. It found teenagers who tried to act cool and were popular during their younger years had a higher risk of experiencing problems during their adult years, including drug and alcohol abuse and criminal activity, and therefore their popularity plummeted with age.
Again, a psychology study that did not need to be done because I could have said, no duh. Of course, I had no friends. Well, maybe I'm not successful. Okay, let's pretend
You're successful?
Okay. Maybe they need to do that study. But
who's using the punch card to get people to come hang out with them?
Okay.
Yeah, just to comment on that, Frank developed a punch card so that people would come visit him in his office and get points, and then they could get like
rewarded,
a gift certificate.
Yeah.
Well, and so what?
Like it's a weird thing.
I based my friendship on the Moe's model.
I played Dungeons & Dragons, and I was at the arcade, and I had no friends. And I rode my bike, and I watched a lot of TV, and I built plastic models, and that was cool.
And here you are, yeah.
And there you go.
But what did you do the night before last night?
Right. I think middle school kids who struggle, I have an analogy. Just as the little caterpillar has to struggle from the chrysalis and turn into butterfly, so does a middle schooler need to struggle through middle school to become a decent, kind human being.
Well, that analogy proves you are not a cool middle schooler.
You're saying I'm not a lovely butterfly? I've been told that.
I think you are a lovely butterfly, Frank.
No, I think these kids need to struggle. The kids that had to struggle had to adapt and learn skills to get through it, and those skills served them later in life. And the kids that things came easy to them, they just grew up thinking things would come easy to them, and that's not the real
That's
world.
That's kind of what the article says, too, is that the nerds or whatever developed more resiliency, and the kids who had it, you know, were cool and had everything, you know, everything was easygoing.
And that's always the best movies where kids go back to their reunions. They want to stick it to the cool kids and find out how much of a failure they were in life.
I seriously, no joke, I went to my 10-year high school reunion with two of my best friends that I met in high school. And I went for one reason, to show off my wife. That was it. I would not have gone otherwise, because I went there,
the definition.
And I was there by myself. I know it's a you shut up, David. And then I get there, and she was late, and she comes in,
Your
and she
trophy.
Was a model, and she's 5'11". And this one guy, who's a cool kid, he came up, and he said, "She married you?" And I went, "Wow, thank you. Come again. Goodbye."
That's what we say every day.
Well, I know. I get it. Okay, whatever. I hate myself. That's fine. Okay.
All right. And so our final article talks about a new study is upending long-held theories about the relationship between birth order and personality. And it talks about the familiar stereotype of the smart, responsible firstborn sibling and the rebellious baby of the family. And then it talks about the easygoing middle child. Well, it shows that whatever kind of distinctions between birth order is infinitesimally small.
Come again.
Infinitesimally.
It is so small.
So small.
That it really doesn't merit any type of distinction.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's interesting, but and they also made the point in the article that, you know, talking about older kids, when parents reflect on their kids and say, oh, you know, my oldest child is more advanced or more developed, it's like, well, no duh, it's the oldest child. They've gone through more milestones. But anecdotally, I do feel like I've noticed significant patterns in siblings and kind of how birth order impacts just leadership and socialization. And I don't know what your guys' experience. Does everyone here have siblings?
Oh, that would be a no for Frank.
Yeah, I'm the only
that's
child.
Right,
of
that's right.
Oh,
I knew
wow.
That.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
So who would, yeah. Does that surprise anyone?
I'm the oldest.
I'm the oldest, too.
I'm the baby, but I'm adopted, too. So.
And you're a jerk.
Yeah.
So it
why do you think
fits.
I was given away?
Oh.
Jerk baby.
They realized it in the first jerk month. Baby. Jerk baby.
Jonathan Hederle.
Jerk baby. Made in jerk Korea, baby. Home to America.
He's a jerk baby.
I've noticed differences just between, I have a younger sister and, you know, she's just much more socially gregarious and kind of laid back and easygoing, and I'm the exact opposite of that, whatever yeah. that means. So,
I have a feeling this is going to be one of those studies that, you know how there's some research on research that says about 30% of them end up being overturned or dispute, or you know, they're found to be, that they don't hold up. This is probably one of those that, depending on how you ask the question and how you measure it, they're, you know, I think it's going to go every which way on it. So I kind of am with you. I think there's probably some truth to it. Maybe not categorically,
right.
But probably some truth to it. Yeah. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have our trending topic. We'll be back in just a moment.
Give us your feedback. Follow us on Twitter at Shrink Tank Talk, or like our page on Facebook by searching for Shrink Tank.
Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. This is Dave Verhagen along with Frank the Psych Weasel, Rachel Kitson, and Jonathan Hederle. And this is the second segment of our podcast, and also the second part of a two-part series on the culture of celebrities and some of the influences that affect celebrities, some of the things that affect them and their families. And we're going to talk about children of celebrities. A lot of this is timely. We just saw the passing of Bobby Christina Brown, Whitney Houston and Bobby Brown's daughter. And there have been a number of stories over the last few years of kids of celebrities that have had considerable problems. Everyone from Michael Douglas's son, Martin Sheen, i.e. Charlie Sheen's, Charlie Sheen, Ryan O'Neal and Farrah Fawcett's kid, et cetera. There's been a lot. And so it seems like being a celebrity not only might put you at some risk for substance abuse, like we talked about last time, but also might put your family at some risk for drug abuse, for other kinds of difficulties. So let me start with a similar question to what I asked last time. Do you think that's true, or do you think it's just all families have problems? These just happen to be families in the public eye, and so we're seeing this and noticing this. What's your guess on that? What's your take on the culture of celebrities with regard to their families?
Well, I think at large there probably is an intergenerational component to drug use and addiction, whether it's because it's just their brain chemistry or their personality is sort of predisposed to that sensation seeking, or you know, some mental illness that they're sort of self-medicating. But I think also within the culture of celebrity, like we were talking about last week, just the amount of access that people have to that. If it's around you, if you're exposed to it, your kids are probably going to, you know, be around other people who are exposed to it. And the kids of celebrities too, you know, they may be dealing a lot with the issue of having a parent who's in the spotlight and getting all this attention and the repercussions from that, whether their parent is making kind of boneheaded mistakes and then the kids are getting called out for it, or they're, you know, just sort of self-medicating or, you know, doing things to kind of be experiential.
Yeah, if you look at these kids and celebrities and how they grow up and struggle, it's not just celebrities. It feels like it's if you're in the spotlight or if your parent is in the spotlight and there's that added pressure of living up to or being like, and you see in communities where they're big CEOs or local celebrities, it seems those kids struggle. And, you know, you grow up thinking, I'm going to be like my mom. I'm going to be like my dad. Well, good grief. You know, I'm going to be like Tom or Brad Pitt. You know, who needs that pressure?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great question. I'd like to see some data to kind of really do an analysis, because every family has problems. These are just the ones that you hear about because of their parents. And so it's hard to know that the only reason we know about this and you're able to kind of maybe say, is this an elevated problem, is because it's so publicized. But I do wonder more about kids who both of their parents are celebrities or in the spotlight, because you see a lot of, I mean, this is in a lot of ways very normal America. You have broken families or being raised by one parent, which is the norm for a lot of people. And if you have a celebrity parent, one's off traveling and doing music or television or movies, but you have another parent at home and you create a normalized structure, I think that can help offset some of the risk. Versus when you think about Bobby Christina Brown, Bobby Brown, Whitney Houston, both were celebrities. Both were going off at various points. You think of Bruce Willis and Demi Moore's kids, both are celebrities. You think of Ryan O'Neal and Farrah Fawcett, both are celebrities. And when you don't have one kind of stable home life and one kind of intact parent, I think that certainly could seem like it would increase the risk.
But I do wonder about this with families in general, because, you know, from our work, we have people that come in all the time and they might be the CEO of a company or a pastor of a big church or something. And it looks like on the surface, they've kind of got it together. And then when you get into the, you know, you kind of peel back the curtain, you see all kinds of stuff. And we are privy to that because of the work that we do. Those aren't necessarily people in the big time public spotlight, but they're people that have to kind of appear as if they've kind of often they've kind of got a handle on it. And we just see family after family with deep problems. And I think we know from everybody's family that there are issues. And then you take that with celebrities and you just put the spotlight on it. And now all of a sudden you see it. I just wonder if there is any higher rate of it or anything that's different.
I have a super prominent family I'm working with right now.
Super prominent.
And they roll in amazingly high circles and on a national and international level.
Okay. It's the Pope.
It is. Okay, shoot. Look, it's confidentiality.
And his love child.
HIPAA.
Okay, HIPAA, hello. Yeah. But their kids are fantastic. I mean, they're just to the core, not worried about them at all. And I'm really working more with them to help them deal with the pressure from the circles in which they run. And I've talked about them and their families, and the thing that distinguishes this family is they spend time together. They go to the movies together. I mean, the parents are gone a lot, but they're uber involved in FaceTiming, and I feel like that's the big difference. Is, are you valuing your celebrity and all this mess around you, or are you valuing your kids?
Yeah, and the parent, the celebrity parents who have kids who are quote unquote, you know, successful, you know, when they're asked about that, they echo similar sentiments that they were very intentional about, you know, when someone was working on a movie or on tour, the other one was there. And so I think there is that intentionality piece. And so I wonder more with people who are, you know, high rollers, if it's just these ego needs where they're, you know, they like to be in the spotlight, they like to have a lot of eyes on them, and so they're getting kind of all those needs met outside of their family, and then when they come back, they don't get that level of invest. You know, the kids aren't going to pay them $1 million or tell them, you know, they're doing a great job. So it's just kind of lower on in terms of pumping them up. And
it wouldn't be an episode of Shrink Tank if I didn't mention Howard Stern, my idol, and the rarefied air he has been in throughout forever. And his kids being not necessarily exposed to that world, they're supposedly amazing women and strong and have awesome values. And the way that my understanding is of how Howard valued his family and spent time with them, I think distinguishes, again, that difference.
I've listened to a lot of celebrity interviews and read a lot of stuff. And what strikes me a lot is that there are a lot of celebrities, particularly the younger batch who are now parents, the ones in their 30s and 40s, and how much they value their families and focus on it and how hard they work to keep all this stuff in balance. I think in some ways, for many of them, they probably work tons harder than the average bear in terms of parenting, because they do have jobs where the pressure is on, where the hours are very long, where they're off-site and off out of the country for periods of time. I just think that'd be incredibly hard to do, and you just hear them talk about the links that they go to make sure that their kids are okay.
Yeah, I think you mentioned the young parents. They've also grown up in the celebrity culture with the advent of social media and around-the-clock coverage and headlines. I remember when I was a teen, it was the National Enquirer. It was the gossip magazines and the grocery store, but that was really it. Versus something, these clips that you get of what are their kids wearing, and they're taking pictures as they pick up their kids from elementary school or preschool, or they're getting family photos out. And I think just that hyper attention on their kids very early on, they get ingrained. They have to be in a very protective mode because people want to profit off of their family.
Yeah, Kristen Bell and Dax Shepard, I mean, they've been very active in terms of keeping their kids keeping their kids safe from the paparazzi.
Yeah, I wrote an article, it's been probably a couple years back, and I probably will resurrect it for Shrink Tank, but I really feel very strongly that People Magazine and some of the other more mainstream magazines are really out of line by showing pictures of celebrities' kids. That used to be, there was a veil there between the, you know, you'd have these rag sheets that would do that, but the real legitimate magazines, People, for example, wouldn't do that. They would not show pictures of celebrity kids, and now they're doing it all the time. They show them walking through the park, riding a bike together, on the beach. It's just a bad idea, and I would join those folks in pressuring those publications. I know those publications are under a lot of pressure to, because their circulation's so low, but it's still, that just from a moral standpoint, that's just a bad move.
Get off my lawn!
Get off my property! So, despite the fact that all families have problems, we would also say that celebrity families are under a lot more scrutiny, have a lot more pressures of different kinds, and a lot more temptations and so on. So, what would you say to a celebrity parent about how to take care of their kid in this climate where even like a People magazine might show a picture of their kid, even, you know, more legitimate outlets might, you know, put more spotlight on their kid, or there's lots more pressures for their kid to be enticed into all kinds of stuff. What would you say to them that would be helpful?
I would recommend they do what David Letterman did, and actually what Howard Stern did. You just don't put them out there. Don't put them in the limelight as much as you can. Keep them in a cage. Keep them in the basement.
That's what I do with my children.
Right.
Little bomb shelter.
But just you be a vigilant parent, and as much as you can, keep them away from that mess, and try to have a line between where your job is your job life and your home life. Mm-hmm. Keep it separate.
Yeah, I mean, that would be good advice. It would be very hard to do. But if you go out to Los Angeles, Malibu, all that, and you see that whole scene, and that, I mean,
don't live there.
That's what I was going to say. That would be a really hard thing to say to somebody, but it would probably be something to consider, is that if you want your kid not to get sucked up into that scene, then don't live there.
Right. George Lucas, Harrison Ford. I mean, Tom.
Those are the celebrities he knows.
Yeah, right. But people that don't live in that realm seem to fare better.
But I wonder if there is something to just the celebrity in general, because didn't Demi Moore and Bruce Willis kind of move out to, like, off the grid somewhere, and their kids still struggle with it?
I think one of the things that I would communicate to them is your kids are going to make mistakes. And when they do, and if it is made public, it's not about you. So don't really put emphasis on the bad publicity that it puts on you. Let your kids have mistakes. Let them learn from it. Be supportive. Be a part of that. But really help as much as you can to create this boundary that my professional work and my professional reputation has nothing to do with what you need to just develop and grow up and be normal and make mistakes. And it's unfortunate that some of it may end up filtering into the media. But
I thought Rumor Willis turned out really well. I mean, she's supposed to be an amazing young woman. And that may be a byproduct of what they tried to do.
Mm-hmm. Their other two kids, though, have had some pretty
serious problems. Yeah, I'm only using data that fits
positive,
my model.
So that's a new thing for you. We're going with that. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, it's our pop culture quiz. This is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Jonathan Hederle here, reminding you to check out my other podcast, Change Your Tune, where we have conversations about change, music, and those wonderful occasions where the two intersect. Listen in with special guests as we have conversations around the hidden forces that influence making change in your life, while also exploring our deep love and appreciation of music. Be sure to check out the Change Your Tune podcast.
Welcome back to Shrink Tank. This is Dave Verhagen along with Frank the Psych Weasel, Rachel Kitson, and Jonathan Hederle. It's now our pop culture quiz. This is where I put them to the test for their chance to win valuable cash and prizes, of which we don't have any. And we've been talking over the last two podcasts about celebrities and celebrities who've had trouble, particularly with substance abuse and with kids who've had difficulty. So we're going to shift the focus a little bit for the quiz and talk about celebrities who've done good. Okay? And Frank, don't you peek at my screen.
And I may have a prize. I think I have a warm, moist piece of gum that has been in my pocket since this morning.
That is a prize.
All right. This is five questions, and whoever gets the most points wins that valuable prize. All right. We're going to start with Jonathan. Which celebrity has granted more than 400 wishes through the Make-A-Wish Foundation? A, John Cena, B, Robert Pattinson, or C, Channing Tatum?
I'm going to say Channing Tatum.
Frank.
Who's the first one?
John Cena.
That one.
I was going to say Channing Tatum.
Frank is correct.
Yeah.
John Cena.
He's a wrestler, right?
Yeah.
I knew something.
You know something.
I know my wrestlers.
Frank, we go with you. Who gave $75 million? Apparently this is true. I need to double check it, but apparently it is true. $75 million of his paycheck for movie sequels that were coming up to that film crew's special effects team, and also bought the entire stunt crew Harley Davidson motorcycles. So if you follow me, he gave $75 million to the special effects team and bought Harley Davidson's for the stunt crew.
Okay.
A, Johnny Depp. B, Vin Diesel. C, Keanu Reeves.
Vin Diesel.
Keanu Reeves.
It is Keanu Reeves.
Oh. What?
How about that?
He was my last.
He's a celebrity that does a lot of good, and he keeps it out of the spotlight.
Yeah.
He does.
Wow. Well,
he's got a pretty tragic family life story as well.
Yeah, he's done a lot of good stuff, and he's one that doesn't seek out a lot of, he doesn't send out press releases about all this stuff.
Cool.
In fact, that information, I think, came out from the the crew and not from him or his people. All right, number three. Who has been spotted on the streets of L.A. hanging out with homeless people, taking them to breakfast, buying them new clothes, treating them to dinner, and keeping them company for the night?
Rachel Kitson.
Rachel? Rachel, is it A, Neil Patrick Harris, B, Russell Brand, C, Dave Chappelle?
I was thinking it was somebody else. Dave Chappelle.
I'm going to go with Russell Brand.
Dave Chappelle.
It's Russell Brand.
What?
I could see him doing that too.
Absolutely.
But not as a mode of charity, just because he's just hanging out.
Right. He's just like, hey.
He's just chilling.
Want to hang out?
Probably is true.
How does it turn out to be charity? I can write it off.
All right. Who called paramedics and stayed with the victim after witnessing a hit and run accident, then followed the victim to the emergency room, and then paid the $7,000 ER bill when he learned that she was uninsured? Is it A, Zac Efron, B, Tom Cruise, or C, Denzel Washington? Jonathan.
I'm going to go Denzel.
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 It's Tom Cruise.
Dang.
And the last one, these are Price is Right rules, and there are a number of celebrities who have donated tremendous amount of money to charity. And the leader in terms of dollar amount, apparently for last year, as far as we can tell, was Taylor Swift. Now, there are others that donated to more charities, but Taylor Swift donated a good amount of money to how many different charities? Price is Right rules, the closest without going over. Frank, how many charities did Taylor Swift support?
81.
103.
One.
Jonathan Hederle is correct. It was 26.
Jeez, that was way off.
All right. And our final tally, Jonathan Hederle 3, Frank 1, and Rachel 0. You blanked on this one.
Yeah, I was giving it to you guys.
Jonathan, congratulations.
You need to have a charitable heart to get it.
All right. We're going to wrap this all up with our doctor's orders. These are things that we are personally enjoying in popular culture. Frank, do you have something for us?
I do, and it is the book Revival by Stephen King. It's not a new book. I think it came out last year, but I finally got around to reading it, and it is very good. It's very disturbing. It's classic Stephen King. Recommend it, and you'll fall in love with a couple of the characters in the book.
A new album is dropping in October called Josh Ritter's Sermon on the Rocks. And he has released the first single for it. It's called Get Ready to Get Down. And if you like Josh Ritter, it's this great kind of awkward rock, and it's kind of this almost attempt to be awkward with like playful dance music. I highly recommend it. It's a very humorous song as well.
Wasn't he in Three's Company?
Yes, okay. He was.
I thought
yeah,
so.
See, who said you weren't up on your pop culture celebrities. And celebrities? Yeah.
Josh Ritter.
You got it. All right, that's going to do it for the Shrink Tank podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Shrink Tank Talk, or like us on Facebook by searching Shrink Tank. And of course, you can check us out on shrinktank.com. We're all contributors there. We've got some great stuff about popular culture and psychology and some other cool things that we hope you check out. Our engineer is Mitchell Lambert. For Rachel Kitson, Jonathan Hederle, and Frank the Psych Weasel, I'm Dave Verhagen. We hope you have a great week.
Want to know more about the topics on Shrink Tank Podcast? Head over to shrinktank.com, where you can find the links to the articles that we discussed.